have a couple of things to bring for you tonight and a couple of ideas. Hopefully they'll come together in the end and not leave them hanging. I have a quote that's one of my favorites, and I try to approach a lot of what I do at work this way, and I think has lots of other applications. I'll go ahead and give you the quote, and then we'll see how many people know who said this, because it's fairly famous. Make everything as simple as possible, but not simpler. Make everything as simple as possible, but not simpler. Let's see a show of hands. I bet Paul. Okay. Got several. A man named Albert Einstein said that. I'm really glad he felt that way, because if Albert Einstein didn't feel that way, I never would have made it through physics, too. I'm confident of that, because this stuff seemed rather complex to my simple mind. But it applies well in the world of engineering, and it applies well in so many things. And as I think about that saying, it applies a lot to how God set things up and wrote the scriptures themselves. I just wanted to share this thought with you. The gospel itself is a simple concept, and we can bring it to people in its simplicity, and the power is there and all that. Jesus was asked the greatest commandment of the law. He says, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. A first and great commandment. The second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. And on these two commandments hang all the laws of the prophets. Well, the Bible would have been real short, you know, if that's all we needed. But the message is there, isn't it? But then what we have to do is we have to take that message and we have to live that every day in our lives. We have to keep the church going and all of the intricacies that are involved there. And there's a lot of things that we need. We need examples for inspiration. We need on and on and on. And that's why this book is like it is. But let's not forget the simplicity when we approach people, when we talk to people. We have a tendency, or the world has a tendency, to overly complicate things. And then there's still people in the world, and there's religions that tend to oversimplify, too. So make things as simple as possible, but no simpler. Because sometimes they just can't be drilled down any farther. That's kind of thought one. And thought two really comes down to what you think of when you think of the term value. You think of the term value, you think of the amount that something is worth to you. And a lot of times that brings up dollars. We think of how is the value of our house. So it's less than it was a couple years ago, but it has some value. And many things in our lives drop in value. Hopefully some things increase in value. But we know the things that are most valuable in our life, we have to keep track of them. We want to be good stewards of that. But the word is interesting in the fact that if you add an S to the word, then the word becomes values. And you start, your mind just completely jumps, doesn't it, from, wow, that what is this worth? What is that worth? Values, and then you start thinking more philosophically, wow, what's important in my life? And then you values, you start placing things differently. And I just want to go over briefly, and there's lots of different lessons on any one of these things, but our values, what they should be. Obviously, we have values that the world has values on the things that I was just talking about. And then there's the world values many times things that we should not, about ourself and our position. The world maybe values power or control over other people. The world values lust of the flesh. I mean, and those kind of desires. And we can see, you know, this happened with friends amongst us, or we can see celebrities, especially in the news lately, how these people just do things that are just seem totally crazy and have lost control of their lives due to these values being misplaced. Now, if we go beyond the value of things like this that the world places so much value on, and you start thinking like we would more likely think. Next thing comes family and health. And sometimes it's the people that just have values of things in this world get jarred out of that whenever they have an illness in the family or a loss of a loved one or an illness themselves. Then all of a sudden they start to think, hey, you know, this is really more important than that stuff. And they don't really realize that until something happens to them. And the health becomes so important. The family becomes so important. Our love for our wives or our children. Today's my 35th anniversary, by the way. So family's important to me. You get a couple brownie points out of that. My family is very important to me and is definitely high on my list. Sometimes maybe higher than it should be. But I feel strongly about that. Then what's the value above that? That's our spiritual value. The spiritual value is more important. Why? Because of the time frame involved with our spiritual value. That's eternity. And God tells us when we start comparing family and things like that to the spiritual values, just where our values should be. Luke 14:26, he's rather blunt about this. If someone comes to me and does not hate his father or mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, yet even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. In the same way, any of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. Now, there's definitely other circumstances there, but he's saying that the most important thing in your life is your Savior. It is not your family. If there's a conflict there, you've got to pick, and this is what you have to pick. So this is where your priorities are. And when we sang a song, is a very, very young, I learned this song, and everybody in here has learned this song. The song is J-O-Y. And I, funny thing about this, is the, I'm going to put an S down here at the bottom. But we sang this song, J-O-Y, J-O-Y, happy as can be, Jesus first, yourself last. So I sang this song for years as just a little kid, thinking, boy, you know, if I put Jesus first in my life, I'm going to be happy. And then I remember one day, and I'm not going to say how old I was, I don't remember exactly, but old enough to know better, I finally figured out that J in joy stood for Jesus, you know? And then O is others, and why, you know, I just thought that was, you can, my mind's been strange ever since. Anyway, I had the concept that was the order it was supposed to be, and then the fact that the letters matched up, I thought that was really cool. Then I realized, hey, they must have intended that from the beginning. And I put S down here at the bottom, even under us, and that's stuff. J-O-Y and stuff. Isn't that the core of the values that we should have in Jesus first? And these, we can sit here in church and we can have this just down pat. We can sit here tonight and go, "Why? That's my values." We'll all agree that these are our values. And then what happens is we walk out that door and things start happening. And this nice solid value system that we got starts to shake a little bit, and we get things coming at us here, and we have a tendency to take those things and maybe push them down to these levels. And we don't really uphold the values that we can sit here with a clear mind with our brothers and sisters and the Bible in our lap and say, these are my values. But that has to transform into how we live our lives. And that's when the simplicity starts to go away. And it starts to be, well, wait a minute, this, I didn't have an example of exactly this happening. You know, what am I supposed to do? You have to be ready to handle those decisions that just are going to come flying at you, one right after the other. You know, and that to me incorporates what my job is here, is to, first of all, establish what my values should be. And that, secondly, is to, when I leave this place, is to live those values that I've decided that I want in my life. we're not the only ones that have trouble with this. And we this came up briefly. I know we're studying Romans now, and somebody's going to have this soon. And this was brought up in the class the other night. Romans, the 7th chapter, and the 14th. And you might have to turn to this. I'm going to go through it a little. There's a whole lesson plus in this. And it's a very difficult passage to read. So I am going to read it and emphasize two or three points in it. But I want you to realize the problems that Paul had with this very concept that I'm describing here. We know that the law is spiritual, but I am unspiritual, sold as a slave to sin. I do not understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not, but what I hate to do. And if I do what I do not want to do, I agree that the law is good. And it is, as it is no longer I myself who do it, but sin living in me. Now, I have a little bit of problem with that, and depending on the interpretation, that, you know, that's almost like the devil made me do it. It's our decisions when we do things. You know, it is, we do have a pull within us, but we have the decision of what we're going to do as these things come with us in life. So the 18th verse, I know that nothing good lives in me, that is, in my sinful nature, for I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. Paul said that. I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For what I do is not good I want to do. No, the evil I do not want to do, this is what I keep on doing. So this is the conflict that Paul, and as it goes through here, and there's lots of good information here, and I'm sure we'll cover this more thoroughly. A couple, one other thing, the 21st verse. So I find this law at work. When I want to do good, evil is right there with me. And that's why the devil is out there, and he is the one trying to find out what he can do to you to make you the wrong decision. In the 24th and the 25th verses of that passage reads, what a wretched man I am. Who will rescue me from this body of death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ, our Lord. The answer is there. We've got to go out there in the world, and we've got to be prepared for what's coming. You know, hockey is a game I don't particularly like to watch. I had a friend at work that's really into hockey, and he took me to a hockey game and explained it all to me, and I did understand it a little better. But the hockey net is way too small, and so they never score. That's one of the things I think is wrong with it. But what he was explaining to me, though, is the goalie, they get the biggest goalie they can, and they put on his face mask and his chest and pad, and he's huge, and he stands right in front of the goal, you know, and then hardly anything gets through. But what I'm getting at here is that he's all protected on the front side. And he was telling me that when he coaches people, you got to look for a goalie that's really to stay facing what's coming at him. Because what you have to do is you put the kids there with the gear on, and something happens, and, you know, they turn away like this. And then, boom, all the stuff they put on doesn't do them any good. Because it's going to hit them in the back of the head, or they're not using the equipment they got. And that's kind of the way we should. We get equipment here to go out there and make the right decisions and keep our values. Let's not forget to use it when we get out there. Let's not turn and then be vulnerable. You know, face what's coming at us. So holding on to our values. When we go out there, know what our values are and be ready face what's coming at us.